It's unworthy of you to kill a woman.
Purport.
Khalsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman. Not only a woman, but a small, helpless, newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible, sinful act. Therefore, she told him, "Don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune for you. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious." But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna, was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. This was natural for her. Om again, Chiranam Vishya, Chiranam Jana Shalakaya, Chakshar Mukhuli Tamalina, Tazmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This part of 10th Canto is a very tumultuous section, the atrocities of King Khamsa. And you're learning a lot about Vaishnava emotional expression in very trying circumstances. We're also learning a lot about how to have cool, calm, skillful intelligence even in the midst of crises. We're finding out about the character of the greatest devotees, and we are finding out about the character of the greatest demons. Also, Krishna has appeared, and we're also seeing the interplay of the Lord's various energies. Actually, these energies are one, Vishnu Shakti Parabrahma. All the Lord's multifarious energies are the Vishnu Shakti department. But this Vishnu Shakti acts in different ways. In this chapter, you see Yogamaya and her subdivision, Mahamaya, acting in reference to different persons. Yogamaya is called Ekanamsha, the one, undifferentiated potency, but she appears differently according to the person. The demons, they see Mahamaya, the bewildering potency of the Lord, which covers their intelligence. And the devotees, they see Yogamaya in terms of their ability to love Krishna without considering his position. Vasudev and Devaki are in an interesting situation. They are affected by two things simultaneously. They know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the same time, they feel affection for Krishna as their son. Therefore, Vasudev and Devaki are described as nearing the Vrindavan platform. They weren't completely in awe and reverence. They had feelings of affection for Krishna as the son. Whereas Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda simply considered Krishna is our son, he's dependent on us, we must maintain him, we must nourish him. You see both sides in this chapter, the atrocities of King Khamsa. You get a taste of Vrindavan Dham, and you get a taste of Mathura Dham. And you see the traffic going back and forth between the two places. In this way, Srimad Bhagavatam is the reservoir of all tastes, and it fills your consciousness with unlimited spiritual varieties. And these unlimited spiritual varieties, which will appear to you the more you read Bhagavatam and serve Bhagavatam, these unlimited spiritual varieties have unlimited depths of spiritual taste. In this world, everyone is hungry for taste. Because life under the influence of Durga Devi is an insufficient, paltry, and quickly stale taste, therefore there is such anger and wrath in this world. No one, however, blames sense gratification for the problems of this world. Very few people can link wars and other mass violent outbreaks to lust. But Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that when lust inevitably transforms into wrath, then you have all sorts of violent problems. We are supposed to be living in a very advanced time in which human civilization has progressed to dizzying heights. We're supposed to be living in a time in which technology has never been better and the conveniences available to human beings have never been better. This is the vision that is presented to us when we are attached to forgetting what is the goal of life and concentrating on any hope for physical and mental satisfaction. That concentration upon the hope for physical and mental satisfaction causes us not to see what's actually going on. This is the grace of Maya, Mahamaya. You take shelter of Mahamaya and you lose your vision. Some days ago, there have been classes here about what is there really to see. The scientists say they see one thing, and the devotees say they see another thing. Sometimes our devotees become a little perplexed. The Bhagavatam says some things about the universe. These scientists say another thing. Who should we listen to? Jutakana Prabhu was telling me how, for example, a devotee questioned Prabhupada about, well, you know, the Shastra says the Himalaya mountains are some height that is far beyond what any respectable scientist will allow. And Prabhupada responded just very briefly and matter-of-factly that those who are saying the Himalayas are only of a certain height, that they're not seeing the whole thing. In other words, different visions are possible in this world according to your standpoint. According to your consciousness, you see certain things. This should not surprise us. Why simply think about the mysteries of the cosmos and wonder, well, the Vedic seers say one thing, and the scientists say another thing. Who should I believe? Why not look just at the fact that you have a material body? Krishna brings this point out right in Bhagavad Gita. You don't have to go to any esoteric Vedic text to understand that the devotees of the Lord and the non-devotees have different visions of the same thing. What does the Lord explain in Bhagavad Gita? Shokyam chakshu sparshidam cha rasanam granam eva. Krishna says, every living entity is born into this world with a certain set of senses. Now, what does the Lord mean by that? A certain set of senses. It means, according to the apparatus that you receive, according to your devices for sensory perception, you will see the world in a certain way. It's not that all senses of all the human, of all the living entities, of all the creatures species of life. It is not that all the respective senses see reality in the same way. This point is stated right there in Bhagavad Gita. This we should understand. Each species of life has a particular set of senses which allows a particular window upon reality. Then Lord Krishna proceeds to give an example that should be easy to understand. But sometimes this example is so close to us, it's right under our nose, so to speak, that we overlook it. Krishna calls attention to the body. Utkamandamstaram bhavi bhujanam bhagananda ramudhan narapashanti pashachigana chakshuja. Those who are bewildered by Mahamaya can't understand their own body. Now, we're not talking about the mysteries of the cosmos, the galaxies, the height of the Himalayas, the distance of the planets from each other. We are talking about the every day and every night possession of the material body. Krishna says, those who are bewildered by the external potency, the shadow potency, cannot understand why they have a particular body. How do they receive it? And how they'll get another material body. Because of lust and illusion, they lose all power to understand their stay in the particular body they have. Losing all power to understand their stay in a particular body means they can't understand how their body limits them and is presenting to them a certain version of reality. Then the Lord goes on to explain, those who are endeavoring transcendentalists, they can see these things, they can understand the body, but those who are not, they cannot understand, even though they may try. Now, why is it that they can't understand even though they try? Because of the curtain of diluting energy. Krishna himself explains in Bhagavad Gita, as always, because of the bewildering effect of the material energy, your senses cannot overcome the challenge and understand what's actually going on, even in terms of your own body. You can't live in this body and act with this body and not think, how did I get it? Or what will my next body be? Or under what terms am I existing in the present body? How am I influenced by material contamination? How this body presents, how seeing as if I'm this body presents the world to me in a different way than otherwise. Krishna says, those who are vimudha, mudha means fool, vimudha, intensifying in Sanskrit, means super fool. What is a symptom of super fool? Super fool can't understand, cannot see how I got this body. What is this body doing to me? How is this body limiting me? How is this body controlling me? Pashanti Jnana Chakshuja. Those who have eyes equipped with Bhagavad Gita knowledge, they actually see. Now we have in this chapter Mahamaya cheating King Kamsa. It is Yogamaya, but she does not have anything to do with demons. She's not visible to demons. Therefore, Kamsa is seeing Durga, Mahamaya. And Durga Devi outright cheats him. Why are you trying to kill your sister? Why are you trying to do such cruel things? The child you are looking for has been born elsewhere. This is complete cheating. This is complete deception. Would you expect something else from Maya? That is our problem. Asha Pasha Shataya Vada In material existence, we are bound. Our vision is curtailed by hundreds of false hopes. It is false hope that drives us on in material life and makes us so foolish we can't even see how we are destroying our own self-interest. Kamsa specializes in destroying his own self-interest. Yet, when he sees Durga Devi, he's going to believe her completely, although she's cheating him 100%. Kamsa is going to feel so ashamed before his sister. I never knew that you were such an exalted soul. I never realized that you were such an advanced personality. Now, seeing that you have given birth to Durga Devi, now I understand completely your glories. This is Kamsa's vision, showing how those who are demoniac are always impressed by the external energy, but they are not motivated by the internal energy. They're not motivated by Krishna to surrender, but a display of the external energy. Oh, amazing. How astonishing. We should devote our whole life to studying the external energy. I don't want to hear about spirit soul. I don't want to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But look at this wonderful, intricate manifestation of material energy, matter. How glorious. So Kamsa's thinking, my sister, who I tried to kill, I don't believe it. She's given birth to Durga Devi. What a great soul. This is what Kamsa bases his conversion upon. He's seen the light. Devaki is in another category. So, Devaki was battling to save the daughter of someone else. She had the confidence that Krishna was already born. Yet, she's going through these protests to Kamsa to save someone else's child. She's using her emotions. She's using her intelligence in Krishna's service. She's helplessly, piteously appealing to Kamsa. Don't kill this girl. I'll give her to you. She'll be your daughter-in-law. She'll marry your son. This is Devaki using her intelligence, how to be strategic. Offer something to Kamsa. Appeal to him, my dear brother. Establish a bodily relationship. Offer something for his sense gratification. You'll have a son. You have a son. This girl will be the wife of your son. Please, don't kill her. Then she's going to remind him, you've already killed 6 of my children. My children, each one was so bright and beautiful. Can you at least spare just one child? Can you not kill one of my children? Please, give this to me as your gift. Kamsa was not impressed at this point. He knew that I'm simply concerned with my self-interest. All I know is that the 8th child was prophesied to kill me. Either I kill the child, or the child will kill me. This is Kamsa's neurosis. In fact, his psychological condition was even more distraught because he knew the 8th child will be Vishnu, who can't be killed, yet I must kill Vishnu. This is the mental craziness that's going on in Kamsa's mind. I must kill Vishnu, even though Vishnu can't kill. I must kill Vishnu, even though Vishnu can't be killed. He was possessed by this paradox. That it was a paradox did not deter him from going about his nefarious goal to kill the 8th child. Now, you may remember the emotions surrounding this whole struggle with King Kamsa. He was driving the chariot of his sister. Actually, she's his cousin, but in Vedic culture, cousins can be so close that they're called brother and sister or brothers. So, he was affectionately driving the chariot of Vasudeva and Devaki after their marriage. Please remember, he was doing it affectionately. She's related to him. She's his own flesh and blood. It's a marriage day, a gala celebration. So, normally, persons will feel these material emotions. There's connection, family connection. There's a celebration. So, he's driving the chariot. And then you know how the demigods, acting as a disembodied voice from the sky, they boom out, Kamsa, how can you be such a fool? How can you be like a beast of burden, carrying a woman who's going to give birth to a child who's going to kill you? The eighth child of this woman is going to kill you. How can you drive her chariot? Kamsa knew exactly what to do at that point. We can marvel at his decisiveness. We can marvel at his lack of hesitation. We want to serve Krishna with the same forthrightness and decisiveness as Kamsa displayed in responding to the disembodied voice from the sky. Without hesitation, with his left hand, he grabbed the hair of his sister, and with his right hand he drew his sword and prepared to cut her head off. This is all going on Devaki's marriage day. And she's being carried on the chariot to her home, where she'll stay for the first time with her newlywed husband, and still such terror is happening. How is Vasudeva responding to this catastrophe? He remains very cool and sober, showing how a devotee in serving Krishna always maintains collected faculties, always looks to see how, even in this intricate, complicated situation, Krishna's purposes can be achieved. Now, Vasudeva was not simply trying to save his life. And certainly, he's supposed to do that. He's duty-bound to do that. But more than that, Vasudeva is thinking, we know Krishna is going to appear in our family. Therefore, I have to protect Devaki, because from our marriage is going to come the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vasudeva, although he's entitled completely to act for saving his wife's life, has an even higher purpose. So he, first of all, compliments Kamsa. Oh, best of the Bhoja dynasty. And he goes on to explain to Kamsa, we should be concerned with the reactions to our activities. Why should we do horrible things just to maintain a body that's temporary anyway? And he began to explain to Kamsa about the principles of the transmigration of the soul, how different mental conceptions produce different bodies. Anyway, Kamsa was not prepared to listen to that. At this point, Vasudeva was in anxiety, the Shastra says. What to do, how to save the situation. Kamsa was not going to be deterred by any preaching, by any good sense of how to live life. So Vasudeva had to resort to being duplicitous. Somehow or other, the Bhagavatam describes, Vasudeva was able to put on his face a smile, trying to see herself in this circumstance. You've just been married, and you're on your way to your home with your newlywed wife, and someone has grabbed the hair of your wife and is about to chop her head off with a sword, and you're going to externally manifest a smile. And you're going to try to speak in such a way to deter this horrible person from committing such a crime. But Vasudev did that. He's always thinking what to do best for Krishna's pleasure. All right? I preached to him. I tried to dissuade him by good advice. It didn't work. Now it's time to be duplicitous. So, with an artificial smile on his face, he told Kamsa, "Why don't we make a deal? You know, my word of honor is famous. I promise you, if there are any children, we'll bring them all to you for your discretion. Let's just spare Devaki." Vasudev was thinking, who knows if we'll have any children in the first place? So, if I can just save my wife, that'll be the immediate good thing I can do. And anyway, it's been prophesied that we'll have a child who's going to kill Kamsa. So first let me save the wife, and then what will happen anyway. So from all these different angles, Vasudev resorted to being duplicitous. Now you have Kamsa again about to embark on doing something horrible. He had agreed to spare Devaki's children, but then Narada Muni, you remember, sped up the whole process. Kamsa, don't be merciful. There's a plan to kick the demons out of the world. Why are you being slack? So at that point, Kamsa abandoned his restraint and killed 6 children of Devaki's. Vasudev, even though the first child was killed, kept on having children. Why is that? Why would a householder go on having children knowing that someone was ready to kill one after another as soon as the children were born? In fact, Vasudev had a newborn baby every year. Devaki gave birth every year to a child. Why was Vasudev doing this? He knew the 8th child will be Vishnu, the 8th child will kill Kamsa. Let's hurry up and get to number 8. In this way, you can see that in everything Vasudev did, simply for Krishna's pleasure, even in begetting one child after another very quickly. Narada Muni had the same idea. Narada Muni's idea was, if I inspire Kamsa to kill Devaki's children one after another, such horrendous acts will hasten the appearance of Krishna. So these are the devotees doing everything necessary to bring about Krishna's appearance. Krishna's already appeared. He's been transferred to Vrindavan to engage in spontaneous loving exchanges with the residents of Vrindavan. Vasudev has come back from Vrindavan. He's brought Yogamaya. Kamsa's prison has been alerted. The 8th child is born. And Kamsa, knowing this is the moment, this is death coming, I must do something now, I must act now, he's rushed in. And, as you know, he's going to grab the newborn baby girl by the legs and attempt to smash her head against the prison wall. Amidst that, you are face to face with Devaki's emotions and her intelligence. Trying to save a child that's not hers. Prabhupada writes that this was natural for her. This shows you the magnanimity of a devotee. Padadukha-jukhi. A devotee is always unhappy to see someone else's unhappiness. This is the heart of the Krishna consciousness movement. Not that we are content to take care of ourselves and be spiritually comfortable. No. The heart of the Krishna consciousness movement is the outgoing concern for others. we can get an insight into the emotional makeup of the Krishna conscious Vaishnava and Vaishnavi by looking at the example of Prahlad Maharaj. He reveals what goes on in the heart of a fully balanced Krishna conscious creature. Prahlad Maharaj says, personally, I don't have problems. Why? Because I'm always absorbed in the Mahamrita, the great nectarian ocean of hearing and chanting. But in another sense, I do have a problem. I'm always lamenting for those who are trapped under the influence of the illusory energy, and they're working hard carrying false burdens. I always point out it's a very hard, difficult situation to person. Prabhupada gives a very beautiful character analysis of Prahlad Maharaj's psychology. Prabhupada writes that Prahlad Maharaj was simultaneously happy and unhappy. This doesn't make sense materially. We want to know, either Prahlad was happy or he was unhappy. Now how can you be both? On the spiritual platform, you can be both. You can be happy because of the Lord's mercy upon you and your situation in Krishna consciousness. At the same time, you feel spiritual anxiety for the sake of others. This shows you the fullness of emotional activity on the Vaishnava platform. Sometimes our devotees forget that preaching Krishna consciousness generates full emotional development. But when we study Bhagavatam, we can see in verses like Prahlad Maharaj the perfection of emotional balance, the perfection of emotional maturity, simultaneously happy and unhappy. That emotional makeup can only be there on the Vaishnava spiritual platform. What else does Prahlad Maharaj say about his state of mind? Kaya deva bunaya swabham tikama monam charati vijane na parata nishta na parata atta. That I don't want to live in seclusion, although I know there are many sadhus who do like that. I know in the Himalayas there are so many sages who practice monavrata, vows of silence. Their goal is how to stay away from the masses, how to stay away from the populated cities. I don't want to be like that. I want to be amongst the people. I don't want to go back to Godhead, even though I may be qualified. I don't want to go back to Godhead without all these people. Again, Prabhupada in the purport is a brilliant insight into the emotional disposition of the Vaishnava. Prabhupada writes that looking at what Prahlad Maharaj says reveals to you the decision of the devotee of the Lord. It's an emotional and intellectual decision based on Krishna conscious realization. I don't want to go back to Godhead without doing something for all these people who are suffering. And I know good and well there are many spiritual persons who have attained some level in various spiritual practices, but they don't care for the people. I don't want to be like that. I want to be amidst the population working to give them Krishna consciousness. So, in explaining that point, Prabhupada says, the Krishna consciousness movement was started on this principle. What is that principle? To be amongst the masses of people, to be amongst the population, trying to help them, rather than even thinking how I go back to Godhead in a spiritually selfish way. These are the most glorious thoughts that are pouring out from Prabhupada's purports. He told us, anyone can translate Bhagavatam, but my purports are my devotional ecstasies. So through the ecstatic Bhaktivedanta purports, you get to see the perfection of Bhakti Rasa. You get to see the perfection of personal existence, personal exchange, personal reciprocation. I remember one very beautiful discussion Prabhupada was having with book distributors in Atlanta. I wrote about it in my Vyasa Puja offering. My devotee presented to Prabhupada that some of us book distributors, our aspiration is that birth after birth, we can assist you by distributing your books. And Prabhupada replied, yes, that is actually Krishna consciousness. To distribute books for the sake of going to Krishna, that is selfish. Just see how extraordinary Prabhupada is to make such a distinction. This is the inheritance that we are given. We're following our sampradaya acharya Srila Prabhupada, who's giving such a distinction that even there's something beyond distributing books to go to Krishna. What is that? He is distributing his books just for the sake of distributing his books, birth after birth. That is real Krishna consciousness. So this is how extraordinary our bhakti cultural heritage is, as coming through Srila Prabhupada. Where else will you hear such a thing? I ask you, there are many wonderful Vaishnavas, but where, other than coming from Srila Prabhupada, will you hear such a thing, that distributing Krishna conscious books for going to Krishna, that is spiritually selfish? Now, we're not going to condemn anyone who does that. We're just pointing out how extraordinary the wealth is that has been made available to us. Prabhupada is getting us to see how to be completely selfless in Krishna consciousness. That same selflessness you saw in Prahlad Maharaj, you're getting to see some of it in Vasudev and Devaki, how they're scheming so that Krishna's purposes will be achieved. And now Devaki is scheming to save someone else's child. Actually, Vasudev, Devaki, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, they're very intimately related. Still, Krishna gave himself more to Nanda and Yashoda. He never allowed Nanda and Yashoda to understand he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when Krishna appeared to Vasudev and Devaki, they, as I said, knew Krishna. They knew this is the Supreme Lord. At the same time, they were feeling affection as that this is our child. Both sides had anxieties. Kind of amusing that both sides, both Krishna had his anxieties, and Vasudev and Devaki, they had their anxieties. This way the Bhagavatam shows you the emotional richness that's going on in the interplay between Bhagavan Sri Krishna and his devotees. What was Devaki's anxiety? Oh, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is here in his four-handed form. How will I hide him? And it's very odd to have a four-handed baby. There'll be no way I can keep this a secret. That was her anxiety. Now, what was Bhagavan Sri Krishna's anxiety? If I don't come in my four-handed form, they may not believe that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, the Lord made this strategy. I'll come first four-handed, and then I'll change into my two-handed form. So this shows you how bhakti is always unfathomable field of interaction between the Lord and his devotees. And the tastes that are generated keep us fascinated eternally. That's why we say Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Eternally render service to Bhagavatam. Eternally render service to the person Bhagavat. Because there is an unlimited ocean of tastes. Things will never grow stale. There'll be excitement. There'll be challenges to the intelligence. There'll be plentiful opportunity for emotional expression that you're seeing in this handling of Kamsa by Devaki and Vasudev. You see all the Lord's energies interacting according to the person. Kamsa gets Mahamaya. The devotees of the Lord get Yogamaya. In this way, Krishna's purposes are served. Everyone gets exactly what they deserve, and the devotees can relish these pastimes. Yuga after yuga, especially in Kali Yuga, our access is given by Lord Chaitanya. The most unfortunate persons, the residents of Kali Yuga, can understand Krishna in truth because of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, we are here and able to relish Srimad Bhagavatam and maintain sincere desires. How can others also be brought to Srimad Bhagavatam and hear about Krishna? In conclusion, please bear in mind that hearing about Krishna according to the Bhagavad conception is necessary even for the heads of state. It is not simply something for the sadhus. The Lord makes that point in Bhagavad Gita. Evam parampara praptam imam raja sevatu. This knowledge that I'm speaking to you, Arjuna, is actually meant for the rulers. Similarly, Prichit Maharaj, in hearing from Srimadevi Goswami, established that Krishna Katha, talking about Krishna, is necessary for the government head. Otherwise, how can the government head benefit the people? A government is supposed to benefit the citizens. How can it actually be benefit for the citizens if there's no Krishna Katha? So that is another thing demonstrated by the combination of Shukadeva Goswami and Krishna Maharaj. He's asking, I'm saying that Devaki and Kamsa were cousins. They were the Devaki's parent was the brother or sister of Kamsa's parent. It's a fine line. He's asking, what's the difference between duplicity and diplomacy in Krishna's service? The Bhagavatam explains that Vasudeva was being duplicitous in order to do something for Krishna. Last resort. He's showing you that in special circumstances, everything, even duplicity, can be used in Krishna's service, but we should not take advantage of this. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.